to be where you are? Where were you born, please?
I was born in central Poland, a small place, a village, you can say, by the name Sompolno. S-O-M-P-O-L-N-O.
And which year was this?
In 24/12/1921.
Can you tell me something about your family background, what your father did for a living and so on, please?
Well, when I was only maybe 5 or 6 months old, we moved only about 15 kilometers from that place, which was my father's home place, called Izbica, I-Z-B-I-C-A. And my father was a watchmaker.
Did you have a religious or a non-religious upbringing?
Religious, but not ultra-Orthodox. More modern religious, yeah.
And what kind of a school did you go to?
Well, I went to the Hebrew school to the age of 10, full-time. And then I had to sit for an exam to go to a public school and got into class 3, because we started school at the age of 7. And the school was mixed. But that place is Izbica, there were about 300 families, Jewish families, 1,500 people or so. And there were also a lot of ethnic Germans in that area. So the school was mixed. It was about 30% Jewish children, 30% German, and 40% Polish. In fact, the headmaster of our school was a German by the name Henke.
How did the three different groups get on with each other?
Not too bad, until 2 or 3 years before the war broke out. Then it became just sheer hell, going to school, being in school, kicked about and so on, and then going home. Stones thrown at us, and to look back, I'll say, the stronger the Nazi party became, the bigger the anti-Semitism became in Poland, especially where I live, which was the cradle of the anti-Semitic party in Poland, central Poland, near Poznan, Kalisz, which is all towards the German border.
Did the anti-Semitism come from the Poles or from the Germans or from both?
No, from the Poles. From the Poles. Oh, yeah. With the Germans, what we would refer to as Polsdeutsche, the ethnic Germans, we dealt with them. I mean, every day, Thursday, every week, and Thursday was market day. The Germans from the farms, they came in, they always used to come in to us, brought watches for their pair and brought all sorts of their foodstuff there, and we got them very well. But the Poles definitely showed more anti-Semitic than the Germans.
And yet, it suddenly changed just before the war.
About 2 years before the war, it became worse and worse and worse, you know, almost by the week. In fact, I remember it was either the end of 1938 or beginning of 1939. It was so bad, the anti-Semitism was so bad, that we wouldn't dare go out at night, because we would get a knife in the back. On a Thursday, when it was market day, which was the main day for to do any business, for people to make a living, and we had the same in our own shop. We had people, what we used to refer to the anti-Semitic party was called the Andekes. They were the anti-Semitic party, the leading party of it. And every Thursday, from morning until the market was finished, one of these members of this anti-Semitic fascist party would stand in front of every Jewish shop and make sure that a Pole or a non-Jew does not go in to deal with that shop. There were cases where invariably they got, say, a kilo of sugar for a copper less than the non-Jewish grocery shop. So they would send the children into the back door to save the copper. Because it was very, the poverty was terrible, the people were poor. A copper was money. And they found out immediately, the following Sunday, during Mass, that person would be announced from the pulpit by the church. It's the church who really was in charge of it. Yes, it was what they're making, no question about it. I remember the last 2 or 3 years, Easter, I wouldn't dare go out in the street. Because it wouldn't be nice, because I killed Jesus.
Did the Jews retaliate against the assaults?
Not at all. Not at all. I remember once my mother was attacked in the street. So she saw a policeman and he says, look, I've just been attacked. And he just says, well, you're alive. No, we didn't have a right to go to a policeman and complain or go to a court. There were disputes between Jewish families, commercial disputes and so on. So we went to the rabbi. And the rabbi settled it, and that was it. Whatever the rabbi said, accepted it. There was certainly one law for the Jews and one for the Poles.
Were you working by the time war broke out?
Well, things became so bad that I could see what happened. They made to make sure that we don't benefit from the Poles. The Poles don't have to come and deal with the Jews. So they brought in, was a shoe repair or a tailor or a watchmaker. They brought in a Polish watchmaker. There were 3 Jewish watchmakers in that place. So my father was one of them. They brought in a watchmaker, and that was it. So, and I realized things became really bad. I wanted that the family should move to the big city, to Lodz or Warsaw. Anyway, my father, he was born there. His great grandfather was born in that village. And he wouldn't hear of it, he wouldn't dream of going there. But by January 19, December 38 or January 39, I realized that I've got to do something to earn a few coppers to buy an extra loaf of bread. Because things were really so terrible, so bad. And my father wouldn't go. So I thought, well, my father had a very good friend, a jeweler, in the city of Lodz. So I wrote, his name was Retkinski, I remember. I wrote a letter to him. In fact, I even still remember, number 16 Bobrowska Street. See, the difference with me, where I remember this, was at least 75% of all those who survived were 10, 11, 12, 13, war broke out. Jewish history was 1,000 years of Jewish history in Poland. And New York Times was a wonderful life. But I don't remember much with kids. I was nearly 18 when the war broke out. I finished my full schooling, very much similar to all levels here. In 1936, I finished it.
Just before you go on to Lodz,
yeah.
You said that you'd been to the Hebrew school. Did that mean you spoke fluent Hebrew? Or good Hebrew?
This language we spoke at home was Yiddish. What we did in school, we translated, which was old-fashioned Hebrew, not the modern Hebrew as we have it now, old-fashioned Hebrew to Yiddish. I remember the 5 books of Moses, which we read the following portion every Saturday. Right? And it was standard. Friday night, after we had the dinner, even from 8, 9, 10 years of age, I had to sit in my father's lap. He took out the appropriate book of that from that part for that week, and I had to translate it from Hebrew to Yiddish. And it was tough if I didn't know it. You know? So someday he would go to the Haredi, which was the Jewish, the Hebrew school, and he said, he listened to me and I didn't know it. The teacher, well, he says, what can I do? He's messing about.
Why are you messing about?
I suppose I should deal with it. No more than they do today. But I didn't mess about again. Make sure next time I know it. Well, I was very, very keen. And I've learned the Talmud up to the age of 16.
But later, the medium of instruction was in Polish, was it?
Yes. The school was in Polish. We had Polish, we had to know. But again, where we lived, I also knew perfect read and write and speak German. Because we conversed with the German. Most of our customers came in were all Germans. So, of course, we were brought up, listened to the language. So, I knew really at the age of 14, 15, Yiddish, Polish, the old fashioned Hebrew, and German.
And German and Yiddish are fairly similar, right? Anyway.
Very similar, yeah. You know, but it was similar in the area where we lived. But once we got to Lodz, it was nothing like it.
What wasn't like it?
The sound of Yiddish was not like German at all. Where we lived, for instance, I can say, I in German is ich. If you would kill anybody from Lodz or Warsaw, they say ich. He couldn't use ich. That's the difference.
Was there a strong Jewish culture in Bitsa?
Yes. It was amazing. Only 300 families. We had every Zionist organization, a youth and then adult, every religious organization, newspapers. Everybody was reading was really important for us. Everybody had to read. I mean, we knew what goes on. The only thing is, by the time we got the Yiddish newspaper printed in Lodz or Warsaw, they were already about a week old. But we read it from beginning to end. But the last 2 or 3 years, it was not a bad life. The anti-Semitism was there. We couldn't go to a cinema and sit next to a Polish person. I couldn't go to a theater. We had brought in our own cinema, which were films made in Yiddish in America. And we had the amateur theatrical groups, which an auntie of mine was one of them. And they went around from village to village to entertain and got a few covers for it.
Had your family thought of emigrating?
Yes, we had relations here in Manchester. But we just couldn't. Number one, we couldn't afford to buy. We were a family of five, myself, two sisters, my parents. We were never in a position to afford to buy a ticket. And then where could we go? The only place where we went was to Palestine, and that was on a quota issued, a white paper, a blue paper, a green paper, and each paper reduced the quota to please the Arabs. I remember even in our little village, and there were fine young men went around what they called the Hakshara, which was a preparation to work on the land in Palestine. And whoever was the first on the Hakshara, when a quota came of certificates from the British government to go to Palestine, the first in, the first out. That's what was issued. Very fair. But there were thousands of postgraduates, young men, brilliant scholars, and they wanted to go to Palestine, and they went around, how did they make a living? Remember, our next door neighbor was a baker. We were there in the bakers then, they heat the ovens with logs of wood. So they would go around and chop the logs, prepare for the heat with the oven. And they got a loaf of bread, and that's how they lived. They went to the butcher, they helped to clean, they got a bit of meat, and waited. But tens of thousands never made it, all broke out, and that was it. So the life was, we had our own Jewish football team.
Did you play for it?
Oh, yes. I joined the first Zionist group at the age of 15, Shomer HaTzeir. But for some reason, even then, I thought it was a bit too left-wing for me. I was a politician even then. So by the age of 17, I joined the Jung Paul Zion, which was the Jung Socialist group. And it's amazing, till this day, it's still in me. I'm still leaning on it towards socialism more than the other end, the other side. It's still there.
What kind of activities did they carry on?
We had our club, we had our table tennis, we had our own brass band. And when it was in various festivals or events, something went down in the night. And then the 13th of May was Constitution Day. The 11th of November was Memorial Day. So we paraded alongside with the other non-Jewish bands. And but from about 3 years through the war broke out, 3 years before the war broke out, young people were so bad that they left for the big cities, and we lost the whole whatever life we had, we made for ourselves. It was all gone. No clubs, no band, no. Absolutely, it was all finished. There was no room, nothing, because of this anti-Semitism. So there were really nothing to do for young people. So what happened? I myself could see that things are getting bad by the day. They were worse by the day. End of December 38 or January 39, I wrote a postcard in Yiddish to this friend of mine, Red Kinsky, who was a Jew, a friend of my father's. And I said to him, my dear friend, this is the position. I want to come to lodge, and will you help me to find a job and some lodging somewhere where I can make a few coppers and send some money home. Now this Red Kinsky was, if you'd have had a chance, you would be a world statesman. The most brilliant brain, brilliant man, a great Talmudic scholar, and not very orthodox at all. Not orthodox at all. My father was quite very religious, but the other, absolutely nothing. He was born in the lodge, brought up in the lodge. And when he received my card, my postcard, he wrote a letter to my father and said to him, "Dear Zelig," my father's name was Zelig, "we haven't seen each other for so many years. I want you to come to lodge. And I want to see you. Let's meet. And as you come," watchmaker's tuzo in a little box, "and as you come, bring your tools with you." And I didn't say anything, not a word. I was only 17. Never said anything. So by that time, we couldn't make a living from watchmaking anymore, watch repairing. So we started making paper bags for the grocery shops. And the five of us were working till 12, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. All right, we made a few coppers again. And then we went to another village, not maybe 10 kilometers away from us, every Friday by horse and cart with some of the yellows I live, to sell to the grocery shops there, a place called Lobranets. And father gets this letter and he says, now set him go. He says, yes, but who's going to make a living here? I said, don't worry. We will do it. He said to me, well, I cannot go by a horse and cart to Lebranets on Friday. And so I said, I will. I pushed him out, really. And he got there. Make sure he takes all his tools with him. And when he got to lodge, he goes to see to the Volkovska seat, his old friend, Letkinski, who he hasn't seen since about 1920. Because in 1920, the starvation in the big cities was absolutely unbearable. So a lot of them made their way to the provinces because it was much easier. So my father, a watchmaker, and this Letkinski, a jeweler, so they teamed up and opened a shop together in that village, in Izbice. And that's how they were good friends. But he was such a brilliant man, my father used to tell me, by about 1920-21, he said to him, he was still back in the province, in lodge. He said to him, Zarek, I'm going back with my wife and child to lodge. I would rather go out and see on these round pillars with the Hadel and see this film is playing here, this theater here, and there is a speaker speaking there. I would rather eat bread and water and see that than to live to have a goose every weekend in Izbice. Such a man. There's only many people at this day nowadays. The two materialistic minded. Yeah. So he goes there, father, and he showed him my letter. And you have the floor with him. Why did you suffer so long? Why didn't you tell me? So anyway, he wouldn't let him go back. And he did the jewelry for the trade, for the big stores. So, but everybody trusted. David Letkinski, his word was a word, and that's it. Because we didn't have insurance like you have here. No, it was over a handshake and a word. And that's our life was. So he said to him, right, one morning, he said, I've come on to the Piotrkowski, Novomiesko. The city was a fantastic city. I loved that city. Oxford Street today, or Fifth Avenue today, was nothing to compare to the center, like the Novomiesko, Piotrkowski, before the war. There were 300,000 Jews there before the war. And the whole commerce, at least 75%, was Jewish owned. So one, they know each other. They all knew each other. So he went and he said, right, this is a friend of mine. He's a good watchmaker, an honest man. He said, he vouches for him. Don't worry. David, if you say so, good enough. And he got, in fact, when I was with a few years ago, I showed him and the street where he was in lodging, a little room, a little table, and he this was worked there. And then within about 3 months, he earned more after expenses, and lodging was dear. That is known, he said. Within 3 months, he earned more than he earned in a year in the little village. And then this, that Kinski said to him, it was March 39. He says to him, fine. How much money have you saved up? Told him, good. Now we're going, he says, looking for a place where we're going to live, a shop where we're going to live, and you bring your family here. So he takes them in a street called Franciszkańska 17 in Lodz. Actually, the trams running all the time there and back. Big window. Sort of little combination in the back of the shop. And a big thing from the first time my father says, hey, what's this? He turned the tap on and had water. When in the place, you have to go to the well, and with a few years before, the water put a pump to the little square to fetch the water home. He's never seen this before in his life. He says, hey, what's this? Turn on with water. So is a slight. Sell it, you're going to take this place. He says, well, how much is it? Is the rent? How much is a quarter? Because in little place, you pay by the quarter. He says, no, no, here in Lodz, you don't pay the quarter, monthly. Because it's 2 dirhams. He said, how much? So he told him. He wouldn't listen. So this great man, this Sanitsky, says to him, look out through the window. What do you see? He says, people, masses of people going up and down everywhere. He said to me, see, not a single one of these people is sane. Everybody is crazy. There's not normal people in the world, he says. Everybody's crazy. One would be crazy, and he'll come in and he'll sell you his wife's gold chain. Another would be crazy, he want a watch. He says, so you send Mendel to Novomyska, to the people who you work for. You bring a half a dozen watches, you sell them a watch. And these people will pay the rent. This is what you call wisdom. And we moved by horse and cart, was 130 kilometers as a travel. By horse and cart, we packed all our belongings and we moved to Lodz. And exactly 6 months from March until September, before September 1st when the war broke out, that was, I can say, the best time in our family. Not short of anything. My mother became younger by the day, I mean 3-4 times a week. She brought meat. Who could afford that in this small place? Absolutely. Then she couldn't believe it. She went out to what used to be a halle, which is like a shopping mall, which I'm sure in this country you couldn't get this, but 1939, and she brought different portions of chicken. She didn't have to buy a whole chicken. And I'm sure in that time here, if you wanted chicken, you had to buy a whole chicken. In proportions. That's the sort of a city. Great, great city. I loved it. I loved it. But tragically, I mean, right away, my sister got a job, the younger sister, because there was a Lodz was referred to as the small Manchester of Europe. It was a textile, the second textile center in Europe. Manchester was first, Lodz was the second. There were a million people there, less than a million, 300,000 Jews, who controlled the textile and the commerce. And the Germans, 300,000 Germans, controlled the heavy engineering. And the Poles, although they were good enough, apart from the civil servants, even then the civil servants, most of them were Germans. Yeah, they were dedicated ones. Otherwise, the Pole was worked either for the German or for the Jew. Friday was always hell. It was when they got paid. So the first thing what did they do? Go in. Get a bottle of vodka, got drunk, and you were not safe to walk in the street. Yeah. If he didn't kill the Jew, so he went home and he killed his wife. Well, that was standard every Friday. And you could see them just rolling in the gutters there, and the way how they wrote them. Got the money, they got drunk. But the life, we had the main synagogue. I was never, somehow, I was rather a left-winger than a religious.